Hi, I'm Eddie Grant, and you're listening to Sheffield Live 93.2 FM.
We're open for business live.
Good morning. It's just after 9 o'clock. It's Friday. It's the 20th of July, 2018. I'm Jamie Veitch, your host for the next hour for Sheffield Live's business and social enterprise programme, Business Live. And we are broadcasting live from the very hot Sheffield Live radio studio in the centre of Sheffield. The show is going out on FM and through our internet live stream. However you're listening, we're also available as a podcast from the Sheffield Live website. So who's on today? Well, Kate Rawlings, CSR manager at Irwin Mitchell, is in the studio. Carolyn McConnell, she's a business connector Sheffield. She's going to talk about business in the community, responsible business, is in the studio. Tom Vickers, Stoneface Creative, is in the studio. Steve Eyre, World of Superheroes, is in the studio too. This is really exciting. It's going to be an amazing program. But before our guests start telling you about what they do, what's been going on in business and in social enterprise? Well, leading educational resource publisher Twinkle, Sheffield-based, have announced a partnership with BBC Children in Need. And Twinkle Educational Publishing will be the official Proud Schools partner for the charity in 2018, with the company pledging to produce numerous resources to help teachers and children to raise money for the charity. And these free resources are going to be available to download from the BBC Children in Need schools website and from Twinkle's website for use in classrooms throughout the UK from September onwards. And the CEO and founder of Twinkle, John Seaton, who's been on this programme for an in-depth interview a few episodes back, he said in a statement that this is huge news for Twinkle. They're thrilled to be partnering with BBC Children in Need and working with schools to help raise funds and awareness for children and for young people across the UK. And it's a thriving business, as people who heard the interview with John Seaton will remember. And if you didn't, then check it out on the Sheffield Live podcast section. Go to radio shows, look up Business Live. You'll be able to find it there. What else? Well, Sheffield firm SCX Special Projects are looking forward to some tennis, because the Wimbledon might be over for another year, but they have their eyes on raising the roof for next year's tournament. Tennis fans are going to see the results of a three-year project to engineer and install a retractable roof over number one court. And SCX were awarded the contract back in 2016. They've designed, assembled and installed a similar retractable roof over centre court back in 2009. And it's part of a multi-million pound redevelopment, which will mean that, like centre court, number one court will be able to guarantee play whatever the weather. And Andy Whitworth is a director of SCX Special Projects. He said this is another landmark project for SCX and an iconic example of the engineering solutions and skills that the firm employs, and they're now recognised as one of the leading builders of moving structures in the UK. What else has been going on? Well, it was great to hear last night that the Real Junk Food Project Sheffield won the CSR category of the Small Business Awards that the Sheffield Star organised. So congratulations to them. And Joe Hertzberg has been on the programme in the past. So again, it's always lovely to hear the achievements of people who've been on the show. And of course, congratulations to everyone shortlisted in the Small Business Awards. There's some thriving businesses and some thriving charities and social enterprises recognised in those awards, all creating income, all creating impact, creating opportunity in this city. So lovely to read about those. What's been going on with you? What's been going on with your business or social enterprise? Get in touch. Tell me what you've been up to. Comment on something going on locally or nationally and how it affects you. Put yourself or someone else forward to be on the programme. All you need to do is email jamie@sheffieldlive.org. Send a text 07904 272 200. Find me on Twitter, Jamie Veitch. Find Sheffield Live on Twitter as well. Whether you're running a business or a social enterprise, whether you're an employer, an employee, you're self-employed, we're always keen to hear from you. So do get in touch. So I think it's about time to turn to our first guests today. And I'm really pleased to welcome Tom Vickers and Steve Fair into the studio. Good morning, both.
Good morning.
Very well, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, good, thanks. A bit warm, but really good, yeah.
It is, isn't it? It is. So I really liked the idea of talking on the show today about art, and art makes a massive cultural contribution, aesthetic contribution as well, well-being contribution. But if you don't have any business acumen, it's very hard to succeed as an artist. And Tom, your father, Andrew Vickers, is an artist with national recognition, international recognition even now, and but his growth, his business growth, his recognition has been supported by your work as well.
Yeah, certainly so. I mean, my dad's been a sculptor now for probably over 26 years, and he's always sort of kept to himself, and his publicity's sort of come to him as opposed to him sort of, you know, going out there. I started working for him probably 3.5 years ago now. And the idea originally was to sort of come on board and sort of promote him over social media, that sort of stuff, and sort of try and sell an artist if you can. And that's basically what I've been doing for the past 3 years, but it's been a huge learning curve, and it's sort of great to see how it evolves, and how he's evolving as from going from an artist to more of a sort of a business, as it was.
Yes, absolutely. And regular listeners will recognise who your father is, because I was talking about Stoneface Creative back on the show a couple of episodes ago.
All right.
You were doing something very exciting in Stores Wood. So yeah. Do you want to give us a quick recap?
Yeah, sure. I mean, basically we own a woodland gallery. I say that right, it's a normal thing. But yeah, every so often, we try to do it like once a month, we host sort of events so we can get people into the woodlands, sort of out of the cities and into the sort of countryside and things like that. And the one that we recently did, we teamed up with World of Superheroes, Steve Eyre, and we sort of had big 6-7 foot statues of all of these incredible superheroes, you know, entwined with nature, and then of course our artwork as well. And it was a really sort of fantastic day, and certainly a one-off sort of experience, that's for sure.
Fabulous, brilliant. Now it's a good time for us to bring Steve into the conversation. Steve, welcome, and
thank you.
Thanks for coming in. Now, many folk here in Sheffield will know of World of Superheroes, but many don't. So, for people who haven't heard of World of Superheroes, can you just give us the quick 60-second introduction?
Yeah, basically, it's just a website and a company devoted to everything superheroes. Male, female superheroes, galactic superheroes, anything you can think of, to the movies, to comic books, memorabilia. So we promote and sell all these kind of things through our company.
And how did it come to be? Because I think it's a really interesting story, this.
Well, it came to be, we've been very fortunate in business to make plenty of money, let's say that, over the last 20 years. And then we started to expand, doing the Dragon's Den thing before anybody else even thought of it on TV.
Yeah.
And we invested in all different companies, probably 20 to 25 different companies in the Sheffield, Yorkshire area. And one of the ideas that came forward was a World of Superheroes. And it's built on my passion for, since I've been 5 years old, collecting comics.
Yes.
And I think I've got I'm told I've got the biggest collection of superhero memorabilia in Europe.
That's astonishing.
At present time, yeah.
Yeah. So it's built on passion, built on your interests,
yeah,
and family interests as well.
Yeah.
And you were just talking outside the studio about how much space all of this might take.
Yeah, we've had to have two different wings built onto the side of the house to because my wife doesn't like the superhero stuff in the proper house, so that's in a different wing, so the west wing, we call it.
West wing,
yeah,
full of superheroes.
Yeah, yeah.
So tell me a little bit about your business acumen, because you talked about being successful in business, and you know, just briefly investing in plenty of other businesses as well, but what was it that what was at the core of this? What was the first business?
Well, the first business was metals recycling business, which was a very profitable business and still is. We had our 25-year anniversary on the 4th of July.
Yes.
This year. And I like to think of myself rather grandly as like a modern day John Ruskin, who was a 19th century humanist and philanthropist.
Yeah.
And he believed that the moral and social wealth of a nation was directly related to its art and architecture, which is what I subscribe to.
Yeah.
So I decided to, because we have been very fortunate, to dedicate a small portion of my modest fortune and resources and time into promoting art and artists in the local area.
Right, grand. So you're working with Stoneface Creative, for example, and we've just heard a little bit about the superheroes taking over Storeswood, and that worked really, really well as an event. You've got a couple of other things that are going on, which I want to return to in a second, which sound really, really exciting. Let's just go back to Tom, if we may. Tom, working with your father and helping him after he was used to people coming to him.
Yeah.
He wasn't proactively necessarily going out there. No, he wasn't.
I mean, he's meet him, you wouldn't think it, but he is quite a shy person, and I think he's very sort of personal about his artwork and stuff like that. And I suppose everyone's, a bit delicate when it comes to criticisms and stuff like that. But my dad's always sort of shied away from the public eye, and he's done what he's done, which in a sense has been quite good for him, because it's sort of built up this fan base that's seen how great his work is. I mean, I have to say that I'm his son, but it is fantastic. But now, sort of like, I'm on board. I'm sort of like trying to get it out to that audience that otherwise wouldn't see it, and that's sort of what we've done now. I mean, since we've been working together, we've grown his audience probably three times the size as what it was 3 years ago. So we have a decent following on social media, and we have a decent sort of local presence as well now, which is nice. And I think we're starting to notice that people are sort of knowing who we are and stuff like that, as opposed to just seeing us on the street and something like that, Stoneface. They sort of actually know more about us now, which is great. And again,
if you had to describe what Stoneface is, vision in terms of creating sculpture is, and your, if you had to pigeonhole your father's work into a style, how would you describe it?
It can't be done, but it's one of a kind, really. I mean, the majority of his work's sort of heavily influenced by sort of nature and the green man and that sort of stuff. But there's nothing that sort of my dad won't do. He's always coming up with new ideas, and it's really hard to work with him sometimes, because he's always thinking about, he's working on a current project, so he's thinking about the next four or five in advance from that. So it's interesting to see how his sort of mind works. But yeah, it's creative chaos, I guess.
Creative chaos, indeed. Well, I thought now would be probably a good time to read something about your father's work, and this came from Robert Allen. Now, I'm going to ask one of you to tell everyone who Robert Allen is.
So Robert Allen is Taylor Swift's manager, and he's born and bred in Sheffield as well, so that's great as well. So,
and this is something that Robert Allen said. He said, "To meet Andrew is an experience in itself. He's always thinking of the next project, not only his sculpting, but all the magical ideas how to make the wood area more interesting. And as you're walking on the paths he has created, you see glimpses of stone sculptures, but also the wood pieces. A metal horse jumps out from the stream that winds its way through the woodland. I own two pieces," says Robert Allen, "a horse's head and the other a horse with a girl lying on the horse's nose. I suggest that people go to see Andrew at the Woodward and the many beautiful creative ideas he's made come to life. You are assured of a spiritual experience as you walk around." And he said more. He talked about the water bubbling and gurgling along the way. I mean, what a lovely testimonial.
It's fantastic, and it does a great job of describing sort of the Woodland Gallery and to that extent of the business, which we haven't really talked about yet, but yeah.
Well, tell me more.
So, yeah, I mean, we own a 10-acre woodland. My dad used it originally to sort of just create his work down there, effectively. But we sort of came up with the idea probably 2-3 years back, just as I sort of started to sort of open up to the public to showcase my dad's work. When we opened up, it quickly became more, than just about the artwork. It became more about the woodland as well. And we started seeing things that we could do potentially different, and how we could sort of engage people coming down more. And the feedback we get from the world is incredible. There's not a bad word to be said about it. It really is fantastic.
So, I mean, that fits also with what Steve just talked about in terms of the power of art, if you like. And we hear how being in nature, I mean, the Japanese call it forest bathing, don't they? Going for a walk. And the combination of nature and the sculpture must be very, very powerful.
It is. I mean, there's nothing, there really is nothing else quite like it. And in that sense, it's really unique. I think when people come down, it's not always just about the artwork. It's about sort of they come down for their own personal, to come down and clear their minds and enjoy the scenery, basically. And that's what it is. And that's why it's such an amazing asset to us, really, because it's more than just stone face. It stores wood as well. So absolutely.
Now, loads of artists will not struggle in terms of their vision. That's something they're passionate about. But they might struggle when it comes to finding customers to buy their work. Yeah. People who love their work. And you talked about people discovering your father, and now you helping him reach more people too. Yeah. And having endorsements like that one from Robert Allen, that must also unlock lots of new opportunities for you.
Yeah,
for your father.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, I mean, it's going back to sort of basically when I came on board, it went from being a self-employed artist to a limited company, and we had to sort of find a way of saying, well, it's great we do art, but we need to find a way of actually getting that out there now and turning it into something that people know about and love and want to buy. And that's sort of what we've done over the 3 years. We've taken that sort of platform that everybody uses, social media, and we've just really sort of driven home in a personal way as possible, to try and sell who we are.
Yes. And you're here with Steve, so that's perhaps an example of a partnership working together. And I'd like to explore how sort of corporate partnerships with charities, events and so on can work for you. And you can both chip into this in terms of your views on how that supports Stoneface. Steve, obviously bringing business acumen to everything that you do as well. What have you seen when you've worked with artists in terms of their strengths and weaknesses when it comes to business? You must have seen artists who you've thought they really deserve to do well, but they haven't quite got it when it comes to business, and perhaps you've helped people.
Well, in my experience, the creative part of the brain and the commercial part of the brain are in two completely different areas.
Yeah.
And I'm mollified by people who can create and who are proactive. And I really want to support them. The stuff that they do is fantastic, but they struggle. Although they can create beautiful things, they struggle to get people to see them and to buy them. All I do basically is bring my contacts, my expertise in business, really, just to expose them to the... And if you expose somebody who's no good to it won't work. They've got to have the talent to start with. All I can do is expose it to the outside world, and then and hopefully it all takes off, which it has done in Andrew's case.
Right.
Yeah. Certainly so.
Yeah, that makes sense. So there's no point trying to become really, really good at marketing, for example, the artist, if the artist is no good.
Exactly. Yeah.
Which is like any product anyway. I mean, people who have a fantastic product, you've got to have a fantastic product before you get involved with marketing it as well. But you can't necessarily think that the product itself brings people to you. You've then got to get really good at the communication element or the business acumen side. Yeah.
Okay. And it's not totally altruistic, because some of the artists that I work with, if I've chosen correctly and I've recognised their talent, and they are as talented as I think, once they become successful, the artwork that I bought off them when they first started off is going to be worth a lot more.
Yeah.
So as a businessman, it still makes sense to me. For me, it's not a charity. It's just helping them get where they need to be. And then so everybody, a good deal is a deal where everybody benefits, not just one person.
So, yes.
And that's what I try to bring. And that's what I encouraged Andrew to get Tom involved, because he needed somebody like Tom to organise and pull things together, which he has done. And it leaves Andrew to do what he does, which is creating fantastic art.
Right, fantastic. So this is something you saw the need for this as well. You've encouraged Andrew to
absolutely,
do this.
Yeah.
And sometimes that perspective shift can really help someone. So you telling him that must have sort of nudged it along quite a bit.
I think it did, and it's not only breakthrough artists like Andrew. I do a lot of work with Joe Scarborough, who's a very, very famous artist.
Yeah.
And he's painting sell for many thousands of pounds. But that's what he did. He painted and sold his paintings. So commercially, there was no path forward from that for prints and reproductions and stuff like that. And I can actually exclusively reveal today that in the autumn, we've been working with the Castle Galleries, who are launching a limited edition hand-signed collection of Joe Scarborough exclusives at Meadow Hall. Joe's agreed to be there for the launch, and that will put his paintings in 38 galleries in this UK and on their global website. So right. That's his legacy. So he's not just sitting on his houseboat painting. It's his legacy, and it will, you know, which is at his age what he's interested in.
So that's absolutely brilliant news, and that was a global reveal here on Sheffield Live.
It was concluded yesterday, the deal, yeah.
That's tremendous. So utterly brilliant for Joe, a game changer most probably. So his paintings being sold worldwide, he'll be in Meadow Hall in autumn.
Yeah.
So, what's the sort of timescale on this?
It's probably going to be late October, early November, and it will be a big launch at the main Castle Gallery at Meadow Hall, and obviously Joel will be there to do signings and question and answer. So it should be a really fun event, because Joe does love doing that.
Fantastic. Excellent. Okay, well, we'll flag that up when we know the exact date for people to come along to at Castle Galleries in Meadow Hall. Utterly brilliant news. Now, I'm going to ask you both just a couple of rapid-fire questions before we all expire from the heat or take a break for a track of music. But, Tom, if I could ask you first of all, then. Looking nervous now.
No, calm, honestly.
When it comes to social media, I've noticed Stoneface have a active presence on Twitter, for example, Instagram as well, which must be a great place to get that visual impact spread worldwide. Are there any sort of rights and wrongs that you've learned about social media for artists, or any tips that you could offer?
I think the first thing that you have to do is just have the content, the right content to do it. There's no point in putting out just anything, you know, like constantly. You have to have the right sort of images, that sort of thing, and that's what we spend time doing. Times is when your audience are active online as well. That's a big key part. You could post something, say, at 9 o'clock in the morning, but if your audience isn't there looking on social media at that time, it's just dead in the water. So you've got to work out where your audience is and what time they're viewing things and stuff like that. They're my tips, really. I mean, it's all about trial and error, and it's what works for you. That's it at the end of the day. It's just don't give up on it, basically.
No, okay, grand. Thanks for that. Steve, back to you, if I may, then. So superheroes really taken off in the cinema world over the last 10, 15 years or so. Absolutely. But comics have clearly been an enduring love for you since being a child. Do you think that there'll come a time when the public will have had enough of superheroes, or are we all sort of loving superheroes as some sort of escapism? Are they crowding out other forms of art? I mean, I know the comic world is very, very diverse indeed. Is that something that we're seeing properly on screen? Are there loads more comics still to be translated to screen? Does it crowd out other art, or does it actually support people's entry to enjoying art?
I do think it supports it. You could say there's a saturation, but there's a massive wealth of... The comic started in Superman 1938, Batman 1939. So there's 60, 70 years of stories that we haven't heard or seen yet. So it's only just... It's the tip of the iceberg, what we've seen. So it's going to have to be managed so that people don't get fed up and saturated. But there's one school of thought which says basically that the superheroes have replaced the old gods and the old beliefs that people had. Mankind needs to worship something, And in this secular age, a lot of people are now worshipping superheroes, rightly or wrongly. And it is interesting. And the big breakthrough was CGI. So anything that you can imagine, they can now put on screen. That's the big difference. You can actually believe it's real when you see it.
So we've always loved stories, and there's an argument that humans' evolution was supported by storytelling. So in terms of stories that people would pass on from person to person before we could even write, and you might tell a story to warn your kids of danger, and that those sort of myths were passed on. And then comics and superheroes, you're talking about people... the escapism, the myth, the lore, the storytelling, and there's a huge amount still that could go on screen.
Yeah, but basically, superheroes, the clue is in the word. They're very moral. It's a very moral story. The good guys win, the bad guys lose. I'm not sure that's a bad thing to be letting our kids enjoy.
Yeah, indeed. What about you then, in terms of favourite superheroes? You know, it must be a difficult question for a guy.
For me, it's quite boring because it is the original Superman, because he's the hero that all other superheroes look up to. the Blue Boy Scout, they call him sometimes, and he's too good to be true. But he's what we all should aspire to be.
Fantastic. Grand. Thanks for that, Steve. That's brilliant. So I'd like to conclude, if I may, by thanking you both for coming in. It's been fascinating speaking with you.
No problem.
And I'd encourage anyone to get down to Stoneface and enjoy a walk in the woods. Now, you're active on social media. You have a website.
Yes.
Loads of beautiful pictures on there. So, Tom, do you want to give out some links first for
us? Yeah, sure. I mean... any social media platform, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or under the name of Stoneface Creative. The website, www.stonefacecreative.com. We've sort of just opened a charitable arm to Stoneface Creative as well, which is called Friends of Stoneface Creative. And that's the same again, it can all be found on our social media and stuff. And that's sort of to help promote the woodland and try and get more people to come and utilise this incredible asset we have in Sheffield.
Yes, a brilliant woodland. So I could say don't tell Amy about the woodland, but I'm not going to say that. Anyway, get on down there and take a look at the website. Fantastic. Steve, what about you? World of Superheroes.
Well, World of Superheroes is the new website and online store is under construction as we speak, which should be launching on the 1st of September. But if you go online, just put worldofsuperheroes.com and you'll see what a magical world is.
Fantastic. Well, I really appreciate you coming in. And Joe Scarborough, more to be announced in terms of exact dates.
Yeah, we'll let you know.
Let me know and I'll flag it on the show. But brilliant news, and thanks so much for making that announcement here on Sheffield Live. So superb. Steve Eyre, World of Superheroes. Tom Vickers, Stoneface Creative. Thank you so much for coming in today.
Thank you.
And you're listening to Business Live, Sheffield Live's weekly business and social enterprise programme with me, Jamie Veitch. We've been talking with Steve Eyre, World of Superheroes, Tom Vickers, Stoneface, and it's been fascinating. If you've only just tuned in, then you've missed a corker of a chat, but don't panic. The podcast will be up on the Sheffield Live website later on today. And we're going to play a track of music. Now, this one has been chosen by Steve Eyre. The track is by The Village People, and the track is by the Village People. It's Can't Stop the Music, and we'll play that now.
This is Sheffield Live.
We're open for business live.
This is Business Live, Sheffield Live's weekly business and social enterprise programme with me, Jamie Veitch. Would you like to be on the programme? Well, you can. Just get in touch. Send an email, jamie@sheffieldlive.org. Send a text, 07904 272 200. Find me, Jamie Veitch, on Twitter. Find Sheffield Live on Twitter as well. Whether you're running a business or a social enterprise, whether you're an employer, an employee, self-employed, we're always keen to hear from you. So do get in touch. And I'm really pleased to welcome our next guest to the studio. Carolyn McConnell is here and Kate Rawlings is here. Welcome both.
Thanks, Jamie.
Thanks so much for coming in. Now, it's a pleasure for me to return to one of my favourite topics about responsible business. Business can be a force for good. And I was talking at a conference last week, and one of the speakers there started talking about something he called extraction capitalism, where businesses suck the life out of communities rather than create jobs, rather than create opportunity and employment. And Kate, you're here as CSR manager from Owen Mitchell, yep, which creates huge amounts of employment here in the city. And Carolyn, business connector Sheffield, working at the moment business in the community and doing lots to put businesses and community organisations together. And I've always say when I speak at events that there isn't necessarily a sort of monopoly on saints and sinners. You know, some community organisations or third sector organisations or social enterprises are brilliant, but some actually, just because they are a community organisation or social enterprise, that doesn't mean they're automatically good. And some businesses are wonderfully run, make huge impacts on society as well, create great jobs and so on, and some don't. But businesses that have stepped up to the mark and said, you know, we want to engage with being responsible as a business, we want to do good, tend to actually to benefit commercially as well. Doing good is good business. And I've been really interested to see how the number of investors who are investing in what's called impact investing, where they want to see a financial return, but they want to see a social return on their money, is growing as well. And this is super exciting. It shows the power of business to effect positive change. But that's me rambling as ever. Perhaps it would be far more interesting for us to hear about you. And Carolyn, perhaps you can start by telling me a little bit about what you're doing.
Well, I'm a civil servant on secondment to business in the community. Now, business in the community is part of the Prince's Responsible Business Network, and it's been around since 1982, I think. And business in the community is a business-led membership organisation made up of companies of all sizes who understand just what you've said, that the prosperity of business and society are mutually dependent and inextricably linked. So I think business in the community has got 800 plus businesses who pay a membership contribution. And what the business in the community asked, they asked two things. They asked that they be the best they can be in all areas of responsible business, and that they act as a force for good to invest in building a better society. Now, business in the community is an arm of business in the community, and it seconds people into areas of deprivation and disadvantage from not just the public sector, but there's United Utilities, Sky, lots of capable people are seconded in. And our role is more local. It's about looking at what's happening within Sheffield in the voluntary sector and looking at what the needs are and then working with businesses to meet those needs. And I think what I've been so amazed about is I knew the voluntary sector would be awesome, but it is how fantastic that some of the businesses are, you know, in terms of corporate social responsibility, and not just the big businesses, it's the small businesses as well that do, you know, their bit. You know, they have a donation box, or they will be a trustee. And the breadth of that across the city is pretty inspiring. And every day I'm meeting somebody who blows my socks off, to be honest.
Every day you're meeting someone who blows your socks off.
It
fantastic.
It is. What brilliant.
What amazing existence. Isn't that brilliant?
Yeah. It's the job is a license to do good. Who wouldn't want this job? I found my dream job after 30 some years.
That's lovely to hear that. That's superb, and you're obviously really, really enjoying it. And I know how much you're enjoying it as well from talking before the show. Superb. Now I want to return to some of what you're doing there. You've given us a brilliant introduction. That was really helpful. But Kate, I wonder if you can introduce yourself as well. You're CSR manager at Irwin Mitchell. Now, what does that involve? And what's a week in your life like? And how did you come to being CSR manager?
Well, a week in my life is busy.
Yeah.
But how did I come to be a CSR manager? So I wasn't always a CSR manager. For 10 years, I was a journalist for national newspapers, and I found myself getting very disengaged and disillusioned with working in that industry. And I wanted to make moves to get out and, going back to the superheroes conversation we had earlier, use my powers to do something good.
Yes.
And I ended up working for Irwin Mitchell, doing kind of PR and a bit of marketing, but naturally really got enthusiastic about all the great work Irwin Mitchell was doing in the community to give back all over the country, not just Sheffield. An opportunity came for me to take the CSR job, which I was thrilled to get. And what that involves is we break our CSR program, which is basically a lens of how we do business, into four strands. We've got pro bono, obviously, as a law firm. We have a lot of expertise there to give for people that can't afford access to justice. We have our environmental impact, so we think about the energy our buildings use, the kind of the negative ways we can reduce the negative environmental impact we're creating. We've got a charitable foundation, and all our employees have 14 hours per person per year to volunteer, so that's 40,000 volunteering hours we have as a whole firm. And we look at diversity inclusion as well, so making sure that everybody has a chance to flourish and thrive.
Right, great. Well, thanks for that. That's again a lovely succinct description of what you do. And were your skills as a journalist first of all put to great use as within PR and communications for Irwin Mitchell, but obviously you got more and more interested by the sounds of it about communicating the good that the firm does, and now sort of looking after the CSR package. But does that that does lead to a question which isn't meant as a criticism,
no.
But is the something that perhaps some listeners might be thinking. Is CSR, in effect, greenwash? Do companies simply do it to try and improve their reputations? And one social enterprise or charity chief exec a couple of years ago said, I've had enough of bank employees coming down and painting our premises for 7 hours and thinking they're doing something good. And I'm sure, and I hope you're going to tell me that in the employee hours at Irwin Mitchell's employees donate, they do things far more meaningful than painting something that someone didn't wanted painted anyway.
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of different types of audiences within the firm that we work with. And some people really love doing that physical,
yes,
kind of something really different to their day job, like painting walls and, doing conservation work possibly. But actually, there's lots of different types of volunteering that does make a difference. And that's not to say that the painting doesn't make a difference. Sometimes we have helped charities move premises,
yes,
and locations, but we also do lots of other things. So, for example, some of our volunteering is involved working with schools in deprived areas of Sheffield that are in special measures, so like Chaucer School. We do kind of programmes where our employees, on their lunch break, will pay for taxis to take them to the school. They will be paired up with pupils who are struggling with numeracy and literacy, and for half an hour during their lunch break, they will sit with them on a regular basis throughout the academic year and help them improve those skills. The impact that we've seen at the end of that is, in some cases, it's improved their reading age by 2 to 3 years. So I would really love...
Yeah,
so one of my challenges is constantly being able to try and measure the to make sure that we are being responsible in how we're doing our volunteering. It's not just us that are benefiting from the team building benefits and that volunteering offers. We also do things like we run a boccia, which is a type of disability sport, and we run a boccia club once a week. So it's an inclusive way for people to reap benefits of sport. We have a prime initiative, so we're a consortium of law firms that look to make sure everyone has access to a career in law, no matter what their background from. So that's looking at social mobility. So we target schools in deprived areas, people that they might be the first in their family considering going to university or receiving free school meals, to make sure that they're getting access to work, like high quality work experience. It's not just the case of who you know anymore.
Yes. Okay, great. Well, that's, again, that gives more nuance, more depth to what you're doing, and understanding of the diversity and the variety within that, and also the impact too. Mm. And you talked about measuring impact and commitment to measure the social value or the social impact, as it might be described, of what you're doing. And that is really, really interesting, because it can be hard to measure impact for any organisation. And I mean, PwC, the global accountancy firm, launched their own impact tracking tool. They say there are global accounting standards, but there aren't global impact measurement standards. And other organisations, social impact reporting is a big issue, hotly debated up and down the land. Measuring things that you have actually effected the change of, rather than counting things that could have happened without an intervention anyway. So any impact measurement tips, and I'll make this brief, but
it's a massive struggle, and we're doing a lot of work this year. But I would make sure, if you are doing stuff, to maybe take measurements at the beginning, and then afterwards, so you can see that change. Ask people, get kind of verbal feedback as well, to see what what the impact is doing. I think those are both quite good places to start.
Superb. Well, that was helpful. That was really helpful. Thank you very much for that, Kate. And I want to return to Carolyn, if I may. Something that I had a look at, which I found really interesting, is the Trading for Good website, which I'd like to ask you to talk about, really, to introduce what it is and why.
Yeah, well, it's an app. First thing that's important to probably your listeners is it's free. And it's aimed at helping small and medium-sized businesses raise their profile, prosper and grow. It's about shouting about all the good things that businesses are doing out there. And it offers a unique digital platform. The aspiration is it encourages businesses to do business in a more socially responsible way. And I think in turn, it allows customers to make an informed decision on who they trade with. So if you've got more small businesses on there, then if you're looking for an hairdresser's in Sheffield, you can look on Trading for Good and you can find an hairdresser's that has got a really proven track record in corporate social responsibility, however small. But I think the great thing about it is you don't have to be, have all the bells, whistles. You can build that profile over time. And it looks at sort of five big things that matter to society. And it's charities in your local community, reducing your environmental impact, responsible supply chain relationships, helping young people into work, so that could be maybe taking somebody on a work experience or apprenticeship, and supporting your employees around, having good HR practices and doing things around health and well-being. So it lets you monitor and build that over time, and it'll give the Prince's Trust a real insight and business in the community into what is happening out there in the small and medium enterprises.
Right, brilliant. So again, you can capture that movement over time as well through the site. And the site, tradingforgood.co.uk, worth a look at. And as you say, it's free to participate, to sign up to it. Grand. The State of Sheffield 2018 report defined quite a lot of challenges for the city, as well as opportunities and as well as success stories, if you like. And when businesses are working responsibly through things like a responsible business forum, are they addressing evidenced need,
Or is it easy for businesses to sort of get a pet idea that they love and they want to support and go that way rather than address evidenced need? And I want to ask, Kate, Carolyn, you both chime in on this, if you can, on the Responsible Business Forum, what this is in terms of businesses working together, and whether whether the direction of travel will be about evidence need or about pet projects.
So the Responsible Business Forum is something that Voluntary Action Sheffield instigated, and they got in touch with several businesses around the city. So that's both universities, Erwin Mitchell, Henry Boot, Arup, Arm,
John Lewis,
yes, and a few others. And they said, you know, do you want to be part of this forum? We're going to look at strategically and collaboratively addressing the issues that affect Sheffield. And we said yes. So the forum is in its infancy still, and we are looking for other businesses to get involved. So if you're out there and this is something that sounds interesting, please do get in touch. We're working out how that's going to look. So we're inviting kind of board members to join the forum to kind of address those issues you're saying, so to work out, to kind of draw out the themes that we want to do, so together we can make a difference.
But I think that what you said, I think there's room for both. I think we can bring part of the voluntary sector and businesses together to collaborate on some of the big social issues facing Sheffield, like the Prince's Trust do with a Seeing is Believing campaign that sort of grew the Greggs. I'll have to give Greggs a mention because they're a northern company. The breakfast clubs for children. But also, I think there'll always be companies will want to link their CSR to their business and their objectives. But I think there's definitely room for both. But I think what the Responsible Business Network will do that I'm really keen to support is I'm here for a year. If we can get this working, it's doing this role, but it's something more sustainable and long-term that will live on once the connector secondment is finished. And from my engagement with charities and businesses, you know, charities give me a list as long as your arm of things they want. It can be from time builders needing a 100 square foot workshop. Sorry, that's a shameless plug for time
that's
builders.
Absolutely fine. Time builders need it, you can mention it.
Yeah, to reach homes who you've had on the show. You know,
John Johnson, reach homes.
We've got some of the people who work with media strategy to get that external hook. But equally, we've got two fantastic universities in the city. They've got a wealth of professional skills. And it's how, you know, do we want everybody to set up their own staff volunteering scheme, or do we want to do something more citywide that
brings it all together?
And I think it's got to be that, but we need to work it through.
It goes back to your early question as well about, you know, digging ditches and painting walls. The VAS, Voluntary Action Sheffield, are working to kind of... There's the problem with businesses, they have all these volunteering hours and it's hard to find the opportunities. And from the other side, the charities struggle to find the volunteering resource. So it's basically looking at arranging a kind of brokerage services to identify the skills that are within a business to match them up in the right with the right charities that need that support.
Right, yeah, so that brokerage as well. Yeah. That's brilliant, because then the right support is offered to the right. And it's a two-way process as well. I mean, businesses, as you've alluded to earlier, will often learn an enormous amount by working with lean, small organisations too. It isn't just sort of a one-way relationship, is it?
No, the reason why we have our volunteering policy, aside from doing good, is that it does our people good. Doing good does you good, you mentioned earlier. So there's well-being benefits from it, but also you learn new skills. When you know it's good to take a break from your daily grind, I guess, to meet other people, to see what else is out there, to learn and develop your skills. So definitely, it's a two-way street.
Absolutely, great. And you mentioned something earlier, which is really interesting as well, in terms of pro bono work because of access to legal advice. And as you've mentioned it, I want to ask you about this briefly as well. We've heard ever such a lot about how changes to legal aid have meant that access to legal advice is less available than it was. So have you seen a significant increase in demand across the firm for people saying we need representation, whether this is for individuals or whether this is people in organisations where legal aid wouldn't necessarily affect them, but has there been a massive increase?
I haven't seen the figures, but it definitely feels like there's more and more from the feedback that I get from our fee earners that offer pro bono support. I would say yes, there's more demand in the legal aid, that pro bono can't just be seen as a replacement for legal aid. So we do lots of work in Sheffield. So recently we've got two pro bono, well, at least we've got more than two. We've got one that supports the Sheffield and District African Caribbean Community Association, which is quite a mouthful. And we've got the Israq Somali Community Association that we run a pro bono clinic with.
Right.
And we do some at Hallam, Hallamshire Hospital as well.
Right.
So we're working a lot with community groups to offer specific advice to them.
Oh, that's great to hear. So, yeah, thanks for flagging that, Kate. Super. Well, we're at 9:56. I would love to barge into, thank goodness it's folk, and steal an hour from them so we could carry on talking. But I really would not be very popular if I did that. We could go on. I'm going to have to invite you back on air in the future, if that's okay, because it's been fascinating speaking with you. So first of all, Carolyn, can I ask you, you are on this job which is you're absolutely passionate about. You're on secondment for a year. You're really enjoying it. How do people get in touch with you and reap some of your enthusiasm and connections?
Well, I'm still great on social media, so I'm not great on Twitter. I know that's something I need to improve on. But I've got email. It's carolyn.mcconnell@bitcconnect.org.
Grand, super duper.
And anybody wants to access any of the business in the community, that is on the business in the community website, easy to find.
Business in the community. And of course, we've talked also about the Trading for Good website. And again, I'll tweet the link to that from my Twitter account, Jamie Veach. So, Carolyn, thank you so much. That's been absolutely fascinating. Carolyn McConnell, business connector here in Sheffield. And Kate, how do people get in touch with you, with Owen Mitchell? What's the best way?
So, I'm on LinkedIn, so you can find me on LinkedIn. I'm on Twitter, that's @KateRawlings1. Or you can contact me at kate.rawlings@owenmitchell.com. Anyone that is interested in getting involved with the Responsible Business Forum in Sheffield as well should contact Paul Harvey at Voluntary Action Sheffield, which you can get from Googling.
Grand. And again, I'll link to Voluntary Action Sheffield. You don't have to be a Twitter user. Just look me up on Twitter, Jamie Veach, and I'll tweet the link to Voluntary Action Sheffield
thank
as
you.
Well. So, brilliant. Kate Rawlings, CSR Manager, Owen Mitchell, thank you so much.
Thank you.
What a fabulous show. I've really enjoyed today. It's been brilliant. Thanks so much to my guests, Kate and Carolyn, who you've just heard, Steve and Tom earlier. Thanks also to Sangeeta in the studio as our sound engineer. We'll be back on air next Friday from 9 to 10. So tune in then. Don't go away now. Next up, it's Thank Goodness It's Folk from 10 all the way through to noon. So enjoy that. I normally flag up business events that you could go to in the next week, but I'm not going to do that today. I'm going to mention that it's Tramlines this weekend. So enjoy Tramlines if you're going along. And then next weekend, Saturday the 28th of July, it's Pride for the 10th year running. Pride Sheffield returning with the largest LGBT plus event in the city. So details, of course, on the Tramlines website and on the Pride Sheffield website of those. Enjoy this weekend. We'll be back on air next Friday. Thanks for listening. And we're going to play out with 1 minute of the Rolling Stones, chosen by guest Tom earlier. This is Paint It Black.
This is Sheffield Live.
We're open for business live.